Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 2, Text Number 21. Kim Adyatasmin Karaniyam Asume. Yet Arta Tantra Navihanti Vikramam. Sriyasvasura Guru Amatma Vadyoyam Yashasriyam Handyakula Namayu Kim, what? Adya, now, immediately. Tasmin, in this situation. Karniyam, is to be done. Ashu, without delay. May, my duty. Yat, because. Artha Tantra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is always determined to protect the sadhus and kill the asadhus. Na does not. Vihanti, give up. Vikramam, his prowess. Striya, of a woman. Swasu, of my sister. Guru Matya, especially when she is pregnant. Vada ayam, the killing. Ayasha, fame. Striyam, opulence. Hanti, will vanquish. Anukalam, forever. Ayu, and the duration of life. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Kamsa thought, what is my duty now? The Supreme Lord, who knows his purpose, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya tadiskritam, will not give up his prowess. Devaki is a woman. She is my sister. And moreover, she is now pregnant. If I kill her, my reputation, opulence, and duration of life will certainly be vanquished. Purport. According to the Vedic principles, a woman, a brahmana, an old man, a child, and a cow should never be killed. Appears that Kamsa, although a great enemy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was aware of the Vedic culture and conscious of the fact that the soul transmigrates from one body to another, and that one suffers in the next life according to the karma of this life. Therefore, he was afraid of killing Devaki, since she was a woman, she was his sister, and she was pregnant. A kshatriya becomes famous by performing heroic acts, but what would be heroic about killing a woman while confined in his custody, was under his shelter? Therefore, he did not want to act drastically by killing Devaki. Kamsa's enemy was in Devaki's womb, but killing an enemy in such a nascent state would not be an exhibition of prowess. According to Kshatriya rules, an enemy should be fought face to face with proper weapons. Then if the enemy is killed, the victor becomes famous. Kamsa very conscientiously deliberated upon these facts and therefore refrained from killing Devaki, although he was completely confident that this enemy had already appeared within her womb. Kamsa thought, what is my duty now? Supreme Lord, who knows his purpose, paritranaya sadunam vinashaya tadiskritam, will not give up his prowess. Devaki is a woman. She is my sister. And moreover, she is now pregnant. If I kill her, my reputation, opulence, and duration of life will certainly be vanquished. We can see the difference between the demons in Dwarpa Yuga and the demons in Kali Yuga. The demons in Dwarpa Yuga were not so bad as the demons in Kali Yuga. Because at least as we have the greatest demon in Dwarpa Yuga, Kamsa, that before he does an abominable act, he has some consideration. He thinks about the consequences, that he actually is aware of the laws of karma. Now, we may forget what the laws of karma are, and we may act whimsically, but the laws still act. Matter of fact, the laws act in any case. It's to our advantage to know how the laws work so that we can get the best result. Now, Kamsa was intelligent enough that he considered, according to the knowledge that he had, what would be best. So Prabhupada translates the verse at the beginning, Kamsa considered. He had something to consider. He had some knowledge. Nowadays, people don't consider because they have no knowledge. They only consider whether brand B beer will make them more happy than brand A beer or X beer. Just like we have next to us Piva, the factory of Piva. What's it called?
Union.
Yes, it's a union between the darkest regions of existence and people. It's a way of uniting them together. Just like we have a temple here, which is just like a little dot compared to our union Piva. Because people need a lot of, this whole building must be filled up with beer, a day's worth of experience for most people in Slovenia, in Ljubljana at least. Some people don't consider because they have nothing to consider. There's no information. But when there is some culture, and especially when we find that people are more powerful, more advanced, then there must be some Vedic culture behind it. People do not become powerful by accident. They become powerful because they follow the Vedic principles. And we find that the demons in different ages, like Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, they were actually quite knowledgeable to a certain extent. They knew about Vishnu, although they wanted to kill him. They knew he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They were against him, so they were atheists. They didn't want to follow his directions. But indirectly, they followed his directions because they knew that they were not their bodies. As a matter of fact, after Hiranyaksha was killed, Hiranyakashipu preached to his relatives that don't lament. He was almost like Krishna talking to Arjuna on the battlefield Kurukshetra. Don't lament, because actually Hiranyaksha was not his body, and he went on to some other body, and therefore one should not lament because the soul is eternal, although the body is temporary. Similarly, Kamsa, he knew that he was told by Narada Muni that in his last lifetime he was Kalanimi, and that he had fought on the battle of the shore of the ocean of milk between the demigods and the demons, and he threw a trident at Lord Vishnu, and Lord Vishnu caught it and then threw it back at Kalanimi, and Kalanimi caught it, but in the wrong place. And therefore he had to take birth as Kamsa. So there's these demons, they have knowledge, because with this knowledge at least they make progress in the material world. Without Vedic knowledge, there's no progress actually in the material world either, in the real sense. There may be progress towards destruction, if you call that progress. Just like modern science is making progress towards destruction, destroying the environment, destroying people's consciousness, destroying everything, and they call that progress. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna calls that knowledge in the mode of ignorance. Adharma, dharma iti ya, magnite tamasavaritaha, sarvatam viparitamscha, buddhi saparta tamasi. They think what's to be done is not to be done. And what is not to be done, they think that's to be done. And therefore, they're always striving in the wrong direction. So it's very easy to fool a demon. You just say black and they'll say white. Just like on the shore of the ocean, when the Lord Vishnu had asked the demigods and the demons to churn the ocean of milk to get nectar. So the demigods and the demons, they picked up Mount Meru made out of gold. They brought it to the ocean of milk. And they called Vasuki, and they began to churn the ocean of milk to get some nectar from it. Amrita. So immediately Krishna told the demigods to get the mouth of the snake and start churning from the mouth and let the demons take the back. So as soon as the demons saw that the demigods had taken the front of the back of the snake, the mouth of the snake, they became envious. Why is it that we, the noble demons, the noblest people in the universe, have to take the lowly part of the snake? While these demigods who are useless, they've taken the mouth of the snake. So they demanded that they get the mouth, and the demigods go to the back and get the tail. So Krishna said, all right, you know what to do. You're the noble demons, and we're just the lowly demigods. So we'll take the back of the snake. You can have the front. Because Krishna knew, as soon as he took the front, they want that. Whatever Krishna had, if they had taken the back, they would have demanded the back. So the demons got the front of the snake. They began to churn. But Vasuki is a dragon. So he was breathing out fire and burnt all the demons because they were right in the front. Because eventually he burnt everyone because there was a lot of fire. But anyhow, the demons got it first. They got smoked, we could say. And they didn't complain. They couldn't complain, you know, because that's what they demanded. So to fool a demon is not very difficult. You just tell them the exact opposite of what you want. whatever you want them to do, or whatever you don't want them to do, you just say the exact opposite. If you tell them, here's a book, don't give a donation. They go, well, why not? I'll give a donation. You can't stop me from giving a donation. don't stop. No, don't give a lot of money. No, I'm going to give a lot of money. Just you can't tell me what to do. So that's the mentality of a demon. If you say, don't jump off the cliff, I'm jumping. So, actually the demons are more or less, they're wasting their time. Because they can't really understand the subtleties of how the material nature works. They can understand to some extent what to get and how to get it in the material world, how to become powerful, how to become influential. That part they can take. But the subtlety of changing one's consciousness to higher consciousness, they have no interest at all in. It's not part of their, we could say, their game book. Their only game book is to control the universe. Therefore, when Hiranyaksha had been killed by Lord Varaha, and Varaha knew that his brother was going to come and try and get him, to try to revenge for the death of his baby brother, because Hiranyaksha was born second. So he was, I can't remember actually. Anyhow, he was considered the baby brother of Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu. So Hiranyakashipu was going to go and try to kill Varaha. So Varaha went all over the universe trying to hide, but he could find no place to hide, especially according to the Bhagavatam, that Lord Varaha was half the size of the universe. So where do you hide? It was in America when they had the animosity, they still have animosity, they had this idea that there was going to be an atomic war between Russia and the United States. So they were preparing the citizens for war against Russia, atomic war. And so it was, they had something about how to protect yourself against the atomic bomb. So they had duck and cover. Did you ever see one of these short videos about duck and cover? I was in school at that time. And so we had drills. This is during the Kennedy, when they had the Cuban Missile Crisis. So we had drills. So we heard the alarm that the atomic bomb had just hit New York, which was what the alarm meant. And in order to protect ourselves, we ducked underneath a desk. It was called Duck and Cover. And in that video, they had one man walking down the street, and then he sees the atomic flash. So he takes a newspaper, ducks into a ditch, and covers himself with a newspaper. Duck and cover. So similarly, Hiranyaksha, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyakashipu, Lord Varaha, he realized, what am I going to do to duck and cover from Hiranyakashipu? So he made himself infinitely so small that he could enter into the nostril of Lord Brahma. Actually, he didn't enter into the nostril. He came out of the nostril of Lord Brahma. But he entered into the nostril of Hiranyakashipu and hid in his heart, because he knew that Hiranyakashipu never looked inside his heart to think of, to consider what to do. He's completely mental. But in order to become something other than a materialistic demon, one has to actually look inside one's heart. Otherwise, if we only externally perform our activities dutifully, there's always in our heart there's something else other than Krishna consciousness. If we don't put our heart into our activities, then there'll always be something else that we want to actually put our heart into. So Krishna consciousness is not supposed to simply be an activity. It's supposed to be an experience, it's an emotional experience, bhava. The aim is bhava. And before bhava, there's ruchi, and there's a sakti, which are all emotional experiences. They're experiences. But just like the demons, they know if they perform their activities dutifully according to the Veda culture, they'll get a bit better result. So in the beginning, the neophyte devotee is thinking, if I do what I'm supposed to do, they tell me, I get up in the morning, I go to the program, I do my service, then I'm going to get something. Whatever it is, give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV or a house by the sea. Om Jai Jagadisha Hari. So we expect something back from Krishna, some reciprocation. At least on my birthday, we present Krishna, a list, possible presents he can give us on our birthday. And we pray, Krishna, you don't have to give me the whole thing. A little at a time is all right. We don't want to bother you. No, actually, unless we put our emotion, our feeling into it, then actually Krishna doesn't really reciprocate with us. Because Krishna is he's emotional. Even as a boy, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we heard that he was an naughty boy. He was so emotional, even Sachi Mata couldn't even control him. Sachi Mata would do something insignificant, and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would become frustrated and destroy the whole house. Because he was a very emotional child. God is actually emotional. We're also emotional. But not for the wrong reasons, that's all. So we have to develop transcendental emotions by putting our heart into what we're doing. Not just doing it mechanically. I'm here, no one can complain. I'm a good person because I'm here. I'm a good devotee. Don't question my integrity. Doesn't matter what I'm thinking about. You don't know what I'm thinking about. And I don't know what you're thinking about, but we're both here, so we're all good. Now, Krishna bhakti mam abhijananti yavanyas chasmi tattvataha tatomam tattvato gyatva vishite taranantaram. That one can understand these, Krishna says, only through the process of bhakti. Of course, the fact that we're here is quite good. It is good. It's very good. We're not at the local bar, you know, talking about Krishna to the people there. We're here in the temple performing service to Krishna. We're not, you know, at the movies trying to fulfill my imagination of how I can't become God, I'm useless, but in the movie I can imagine myself to be God and therefore I can take pleasure in my imagination. So actually we want pleasure. If we can't get it grossly, then we'll try to get it. Actually, everyone's trying to get it subtly. The whole endeavor on the gross manifestation is just to get some emotional pleasure, actually, from the material world, to get recognition, to get some feeling of that one wants in the material world. One will go through so many different things externally to get what one feel, what one is looking for emotionally in the material world. And if one is performing devotional service, then we should try to do the same thing in devotional service. Try to get some emotional fulfillment by putting our heart into it. Because if we put our heart into it, then Krishna will reciprocate within the heart. And if not, just like we have the example of Banasura. Banasura had 1,000 arms. So that's quite a number of arms. You can do a lot with 1,000 arms. Someone asks you to wash the dishes in the kitchen, you can do it very quickly. No problem. And in kirtan, you'd be really popular. You can play all the instruments. So he had 1,000 arms, and he didn't know, he wasn't a devotee there, and he wasn't doing kirtan. He wouldn't wash the dishes. So he didn't know what to do with his 1,000 arms. Because he was a kshatriya, he wanted to fight. But, generally speaking, kshatriyas are the arms. So if you have 1,000 powerful arms, you could probably defeat practically anyone. You could definitely become the world heavyweight champion boxer. Because how do you block 1,000 punches? In any case, he went all over the universe challenging everyone to fight, and everyone would flee because they knew they couldn't defeat him. So he's getting really frustrated. Because when you want to fight, there's an itching sensation. Lust, anger, greed, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, they're all itching sensations. So the desire to fight is also an itching sensation. So his arms were always itching for a fight, and he couldn't satisfy it. So he went to the mountains, and he started to pound on the mountains and beat the mountains into little pebbles. That's called frustration. But one day he went to his benefactor, Lord Shiva, and he said, put up your dukes, let's fight. Because he figured maybe Shiva would fight with him. And Lord Shiva, who had given him the 1,000 arms, said, oh, you stupid rascal. You know, I'm not going to fight with you because it's a useless fight. It's no challenge. But don't worry. One day, someone will come, and when you fight with them, they'll smash you to pieces, and your flag of victory will no longer fly. So you think, oh my God, when is this person coming? Let me do an astrological chart, make sure he doesn't hurt me. Where do I hit him first? No, he was elated. He became completely elated that finally someone's going to come and smash me to pieces, and therefore this itching sensation in my arms will no longer be there, and I'll become a little peaceful. So Prabhupada compares this to modern civilization. They build all these weapons, all these destructive forces, and everyone's getting more and more in anxiety, more and more itching for some kind of end to the whole thing so they can become peaceful. So they're aiming for destruction because they'll be happy if they're destroyed. The modern demons, they're actually, mostly they're interested in death. Their symbols and their rituals are all about death because they think death will be the liberation from all their misery that's caused by their frustration of having all this opulence but not be able to satisfy themselves with it. Therefore, they're always looking for destruction. So Kangsu is of the same mentality. He wanted to enjoy his reputation. He wanted to enjoy in so many different ways, especially the demons are interested in enjoying their reputation. It can live beyond them. Like Jarasandha was willing to give his own head to Krishna and Balaram, Krishna and Arjuna and Bhima, if he would have, if his fame would go on perpetually for doing so. Because he wanted to enjoy his false ego, perpetually his false ego forever, the reputation. But it's actually, we know it's useless, such an endeavor, such an enjoyment will never actually fulfill one or make one satisfied. But that's the nature of demons. They don't know where to put their heart, they don't know where to put their intelligence to actually become satisfied. And it's not in anything material. So if we put our heart as spirit souls in the Supreme, even by a little endeavor, then we'll actually feel satisfied and completed. Otherwise, it doesn't matter, you become the Lord of the universe. If you're putting your heart into your material reputation that is going to live, I mean, Hiranyakashipu, Jarasandha, Kangsa, they did make it into the Bhagavatam, which is probably more than we're going to do. But what is the value of being in the Bhagavatam as a demon, as an example for what you're not supposed to do? But even an insignificant devotee, Kulavekar Sridhar Swami, who made it, Kulavekar Sridhar, who made it into the Chaitanya Krishna, the Bhagavad, or Chaitanya Charitamrita, but his only endeavor was to please Krishna, feelingly please Krishna in any circumstance, and therefore he was always happy under anything. He was living in a hut with only with not even a roof practically on it, but he was completely ecstatic chanting the holy name with great feeling. So that's what we should strive for. Trying to please Krishna, trying to please Krishna's devotees, trying to put our feeling, whatever we're doing, when we're chanting Hare Krishna, or when we're doing service, try to put our heart into it, and then Krishna will reciprocate. Otherwise, if we just do things mechanically, then that's what we'll get. It's just Krishna will stay there just watching us, waiting for us to wake up and do something with some feeling. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
I would ask, how could we react not to but when we are talking to our friends that they are not become
envious. Envious.
How could we, when we are talking to them, our realizations and actions and how we are processing our process, but, how can I act that they are not disturbed with my talking?
You mean tell them about your pastimes with Krishna in the groves of Vrindavan? And then he put a garland around my neck, and we danced together in the moonlight. How to tell? Well, if they're actually your friends, they won't become envious. And if they're really envious, they're not really your friends. Besides that, we have to judge what we can tell people. We tell people too far beyond what they can understand, beyond their experience, then obviously their minds are going to, why are they telling me this? When we talk to people, we should tell them things that are useful to them. Then they'll appreciate it. If we talk to them about things that are not useful to them, that seem to present ourselves as being very important, then obviously we're inviting them to become envious of us. Because we're not there to serve them, we're there to have them serve our ego, that apparently. So we have to be careful to tell people that things that are useful to them rather than seemingly will satisfy our own desires. Then people won't be envious. They think we're trying to serve them. If we think we want them to serve us, they may become envious. They're not really advanced in devotional service. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I always thought if somebody's name is in Bhagavata, he's glorious because then they become devotee. Is that what I mean? Because you said in your lecture, it doesn't matter that somebody is Bhagavatam, if he is against Krishna, he is not glorious. Is he become devotee at the end of the
Well, if you're glorified for being the biggest demon in the universe, I don't know if that's really... Depends. The other, there's a different Ramayans, and there's one Ramayan where Ravana is the hero. So, but he's... That Ramayan is read by demons. So that he's become glorious in their eyes, but in the eyes of demons. We generally don't think Ravana was a great, great hero as a devotee. He was a demon. He's lives forever as a demon, and he's not really appreciated very much by the devotees as being the biggest demon. Some appreciation may be there because he was a scholar, but in terms of stealing Sita and fighting against Ram, or Kumbhakarna eating the monkey soldiers, he doesn't get much credit in most of our eyes, I hope. Yes?
Just like, I can't remember, is Ravana kind of incarnation of Jaya or Vijaya or not?
Yeah, sometimes he is, sometimes he's not. According to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in some millenniums, he's an incarnation of Jaya and Vijaya, and sometimes he's really just a demon. These are pastimes that go on in every day of Brahma. So it's not that Jaya and Vijaya keep on falling down every day of Brahma. Sometimes they do.
So we can't glorify them because of Jaya and Vijaya. It is not the point.
No, but sometimes they are. In our Padila Bhagavatam, then they're Jaya and Vijaya. But if you're Jaya and Vijaya and act like a demon, we understand that your activities are not of Jaya and Vijaya. Their activities are that of a demon under the external energy. Just like every soul is eternally a devotee of Krishna, Nitya Siddha Krishna Premasa. But their activities may be under the external energy, and therefore we don't glorify them. Become like them. Follow their example. They're great. They're really good. We don't, because they're under the external energy, their activities. Still, they may be Jaya and Vijaya, so we appreciate that Jaya and Vijaya, just like we appreciate every living entity is Krishna's eternal servant. But we don't appreciate everyone's activities under the external energy. And even someone is insignificant and they're performing devotional service, then we glorify them because they're under the internal energy. Anything else? Kuala Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.